Movies On Up discussion episode, The World's End, an epic of epic epicness. I am Dave, joined by the Nick Frost to my Simon Pegg, Ryan.
That one works. I'm just going to leave it alone.
Yeah. So this is World's End.
I'm probably
closer to Nick Frost.
Yeah.
But I like them both, so I don't really care.
Fair enough.
But The World's End came out on DVD this week. Less our memory is terrible, which it is. I think this is the first episode we've ever done for a movie the week it comes out on DVD.
I think so. If we're wrong, you can let us know. moviesonup@gmail.com, Twitter @moviesonup, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. While you're letting us know about that, if you want to enter the tagline contest, feel free to do that in those ways as well.
An epic of epic epicness. That is our tagline. If you know what that's from, let us know if you're right and we pick you. We will pick you and send you a prize.
You'll win the same prize package that was available last time we used that tagline.
Yep, because I've used it before. So World's End, the third in the Cornetto trilogy from Edgar Wright, written by Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, starring Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Patty Considine, Martin Freeman, and Eddie Marzan, and Rosamund Pike.
Yeah. Don't leave out the Bond girl. I'll be pissed. It came out August 23rd. It finished in fourth opening weekend. It opened opposite The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones, You're Next. It finished fourth with $8 million behind Lee Daniels' The Butler was number one. We're the Millers, number two, Mortal Instruments 3, and then World's End.
I believe that weekend, though, if it had the highest per screen average in the top 10. Because I know it was on a fraction of the screens the other ones were.
Yeah, looking at the top 10, it did. It just barely actually edged out The Butler. But, well, I mean, barely. About $300 per screen was about $5,600 for World's End and about $5,300 for The Butler.
They started with Shaun of the Dead, which was a horror movie, Hot Fuzz, action movie. And they've always said this was their sci-fi conclusion to the Cornetto trilogy. As a sci-fi movie, how do you feel The World's End pulled off?
It takes a long time for it to actually become a sci-fi movie. So I guess that's kind of where I would scratch my head a bit. I think once, you know, the sci-fi element does kick in, it's not one of the better ones I've seen. I mean, if we were going to make, and we have made horror lists where Shaun of the Dead is all over it because it's a really good horror movie. This, I don't think, would make a list of top sci-fi movies, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah. It was enjoyable. Like, it's weird to judge this movie because it's so hard to watch it not compared to Shaun of the Dead.
Yes.
From a how much you like it. But to me, Shaun of the Dead is flawless. Like, if you want me to pick out what's wrong with Shaun of the Dead, you're going to be waiting a while. I'm trying to pick my words because I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it a lot. I'd almost say, like, I loved it because I do love everybody involved. I love Edgar Wright, Nick Frost, Simon Pegg. I love them, so I think I did love it on first watch. But not as much as Shaun of the Dead on first watch.
So, like, and maybe it would make sense to save this for the end, but why not do it 4 minutes into the podcast? That's fine. When we were kind of wrapping up last week, I think off mic at this point, I said, well, I haven't seen The World's End yet, but I can pretty much guarantee you I'm going to like it more than Hot Fuzz, but not as much as Shaun of the Dead. And after seeing it, that's, I think, right about where it fits in. You said you can't compare it to Shaun of the Dead, but could you compare it to Hot Fuzz?
No. And I think that's what's so good about, because, and that's where I'm being unfair, is that Hot Fuzz, I didn't fall in love with it on the first time as much as I have on repeat viewings. So I kind of expect this to be the same, that the more I watch it, the more I will love it, because Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg are amazing screenwriters. Like, the subtle stuff they do with the foreshadowing. I mean, just the name of the names of the pubs is the story. It's the whole plot right there within the names. That one was one of the less subtle things they've done, but I just love how well written they are, and there's always more jokes you get upon multiple viewings.
Because they're very quick.
They're very quick, and they're very, I mean, at Shaun of the Dead, you watch at the very beginning when, after Liz dumps them, and Nick Frost is telling them what they're going to do. They're going to have some Bloody Marys, kill the king, and, like, all that stuff happens. The first zombie they see is Mary from the grocery store. They end up killing the stepdad, or the stepdad ends up dying. Like, all that stuff happens, and it's just such a throwaway line about, here's what we're going to do this night to get over your girlfriend. But yet it foreshadows the entire plot of the movie, That's stuff you don't pick up on the first time. That's stuff you probably don't pick up on the second or third time until you're really paying attention. And I love that about these movies. World's End, I did really like it. It's different than the other two. Like, Shaun of the Dead was more of a straightforward horror comedy. Hot Fuzz, I think, was still different because I think Hot Fuzz was more of a satire on action movies, kind of.
Yeah.
I feel like it took a lot of the cliches, and even that one where they're in the car and Nick Frost is asking him, have you ever jumped sideways shooting two guns?
Last shooting two guns.
Have you ever laid, like, shot in the air and screamed? Like, everything he asks him happens in the last act of the movie. So it's like little stuff like that I love, and I'm sure there's stuff in The World's End like that that I just haven't got yet. So on first watch, I did love it, but can you love something and still be disappointed at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and you're probably more guilty of this than I was, especially for this movie. Your expectations were pretty high on it.
I love all of them.
Right, based on your love for some Edgar Wright movies. But mine were much lower. And I didn't think I wasn't going to like the movie. I expected to enjoy it, and I did. I got out of it exactly what I thought I would. If you're expecting a 10 and you get a 9, are you disappointed? Well, I guess by the dictionary definition of disappointment, but does that mean you didn't love the movie? No, not at all. You give it a 9.
I mean, we both enjoyed it. I think that's fair to say. What stuck out to you is what worked the most for you?
The development, or at least for the first probably half of the movie, the lack of development of the character of Nick, I thought was really awesome. And the attention to detail where everything was this, it was like he was frozen in time and came out 30 years later driving the same car, listening to the exact same
cassette.
You're
talking Gary King, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Simon Pegg's character.
Yeah.
Okay.
What the hell did I call him?
Nick.
Yeah.
That's why
Not Nick
lost.
Frost. I don't know. I don't know why I did that. Yeah, Gary, the King. But yeah, like, he's listening to the same cassette. Everything is the exact same about him. And, you know, everyone else had kind of moved on. And that's really all you need to see is, you know, that opening montage. Well, I guess it's not the opening montage, but just him kind of re-meeting his friends. That pretty much tells you, you know, what the arc of the movie is going to be. Again, it's not necessarily foreshadowing, but you know that there's going to be some kind of an arc with his character. You see where he starts and you see where they've started, and you kind of know what's going to happen, I feel like.
Yeah, but then I don't think you get what happens. And I hate to keep comparing it, but it makes sense. And Shaun of the Dead, Sean grew up and matured and fixed what was wrong in order to get Liz back and move on. Hot Fuzz, Nicholas Angel, maybe that's where you got Nick from. Nicholas Angel, he learned to be more of a team player. He learned to loosen up a little bit, and that led to the end. There's really no arc with Gary King. He doesn't really grow as a person. Gary King at the end is still stubborn Gary King, wanting to be stuck in the past, wanting to not do anything anybody tells him to, as the beginning. So, I mean, it's not... He does grow a little bit, but it's not the, he lets go of the past, he moves on, they save the world. Neither of those things happen, which I like, because you don't expect that.
I think sort of his story was not necessarily becoming like his friends and getting, you know, the lives and the jobs and the children that they had. I think it was the acceptance of his situation, the acceptance of what he had or what he didn't have. And I think he kind of ended up getting there and then finding something that worked for him. I mean, at the end of the movie, he's not a drunk anymore. So, I mean, that's kind of a pretty big step for that character.
Yeah, and that's, I do like that it is basically, I mean, at the core, it's a story about alcoholism, kind of. Like, he didn't finish
about alcoholism and arrested development, I think.
Yeah, he didn't finish this crawl 20 years ago, and that's kind of been his excuse, because when you do have addiction, you want to latch on to, why are you broken? Why do you have this? And that was kind of his thing, is that, you know, he's addicted to alcohol and who knows what else, because he didn't get to complete that arc 20 years ago. So that's why it's so important to him at the World's End to drink that last pint. Because once he completes that, in his mind, that fixes his problem. And I do like the we'll get to the end here in a little bit with the water. So, I mean, yeah, in the sense of an alcoholic, he did change. I don't know. I just like that it wasn't the feel good. Oh, everything's fixed with him now. And they saved the day because they didn't.
In the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes, there's kind of a dogleg, I guess, where, yeah, it doesn't. You know, the movie had been progressing like you thought it would. And then all of a sudden you do get some things that are, you know, you're left scratching your head a little bit, I guess.
And that, I guess that's my one question. And before my thoughts, I'm going to ask you this. Did it fall apart at the end?
I think it fell apart when we came back to Gary's character. Just seeing Nick Frost sitting there and relating the story, I thought was kind of cool. It felt very like Army of Darkness, like you've screwed something up and it's completely damaged your world. And you're sitting there like, hey, there's a funny story about the time me and my friends literally caused
this
kind of the apocalypse. I thought that was really kind of neat. But then it just kind of spiraled out of control. And like,
The sword fight.
Yeah, like, I did not care for that.
When I was first watching it, I don't think I got it. I still don't think I do. I trust Edgar Wright and Simon enough as like screenwriters that I think there's something there that I'm missing. Because once they got to the world's end and he pulls the thing and they drop down, it kind of lost a little bit for me. The whole dialogue with the network, I thought was funny. I love that at one point he says, you're impossible to argue with.
Yeah, which his friends have said
Nick
a couple
Frost
times.
And Nick Frost had already said that. Like, I like that, and I like that it gets the sense of, like, there's only one Gary King. And then he's like, I'm not the only Gary King. And they're like, you just said. Like,
yeah.
That's what it's like to be friends with an alcoholic. Like, that's what it's like to argue with somebody who has problems like that. So I liked it to an extent, but it just felt like it brought it down to a halt. Because what I did like so much about it was I thought the action was awesome.
Yeah.
I thought the action, the
fight scenes were pretty good.
Super well done. Ridiculously well done considering the characters. But to put them in that situation, you made Nick Frost look like a legitimate, like he should be in the next Expendables. The action was so good. And it just, I was already excited for Ant-Man. But seeing what Edgar Wright can do now with, I mean, he did action in Hot Fuzz and obviously Scott Pilgrim.
I was just going to say, I'm going to see if
he's
you
done
mentioned.
It. No, he's done it before, right. But this was like a whole new level. Like, this was, I'm excited to see what he's doing with, and that demo reel with Ant-Man. Like, I love Edgar Wright's mind, and he obviously knows how to make action without focusing only on action because it came out of nowhere. You don't watch this movie and expect those kind of fight scenes. And then when they happen, you're just like if you watch a Tony Jaa movie or something, you expect those kind of fight scenes. You don't expect that out of Nick Frost.
Now, let's pump the brakes here just half a second.
No, Nick Frost is the next Tony Jaa.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I am. I cannot co-sign on that.
He's
going to
kickbox
statement.
An elephant.
He didn't kickbox the elephants. He was protecting the elephants. He kickboxed, and he didn't kickbox. He's a Muay Thai guy. He Muay Thai'd people because they messed with his elephants. The fight scenes were good. They were not. Nothing is going to touch that scene in The Protector. It was like one take of him going up the steps, just beating up the entire country of Thailand. I love that. You touched a nerve with me, son.
I liked the action. I thought it was good.
It was good. I agree.
I liked a lot. I mean, the cast was good. And it was nice to see kind of Nick Frost in the Simon Pegg role. And they kind of flip-flopped in this one. And it kind of came full circle from Shaun of the Dead. And I thought the supporting cast, this one relied more on the supporting cast than the previous two, I feel like, because Patty Considine was huge, Martin Freeman, Rosamund Pike. I mean, they've all had
her moments.
They've all had their, I mean, all their other ones have, like, especially Shaun of the Dead was, this felt more like an ensemble than the other ones. Because, I mean, Shaun of the Dead was Simon Pegg and Nick Frost,
right?
Even though the others were there. But this one felt more like an ensemble, and I thought it worked because
I guess it sort of had to.
It had to because Gary King is a prick, and I don't want to root for him the whole time, so you need to have something else going on for me to care about.
You need to have the other four musketeers.
Yes. But I guess my point on the ending is I don't think I got it right away. And maybe I will upon multiple endings, but it just lost steam for me because the action amped it up so much, and the from bar to bar to bar, the car driving through the wall, like all of that got me like going. And then our climax essentially is a dialogue. And that's where it came from, is the ending climax, the boss level essentially is just a dialogue.
Yeah.
With a lot of exposition in it where you're explaining everything that's going on. And I guess that just kind of fell off a little bit for me.
That part of the ending I liked. I liked that it just got to be so frustrating that literally the aliens just like, fuck it.
Yeah. No, I do love that part. That's the thing is that I'm not – it lost a little steam for me, but I still loved it. There were still good jokes in there. And just the whole idea that this one man is so obnoxious and so annoying that it's worth just leaving the planet for.
But he's not the only Gary King.
Yeah.
There had to be other people that thought the same thing. And that's from a sci-fi lens. I like the fact that you have a lot of aliens that want to mess around with humans. But like, what would actually happen if you were messing around with some ridiculously drunk humans that you would just say, you know what? This isn't worth it. You people kill yourselves. There's like, if when Keanu Reeves showed up with his big robot buddy, if he encountered a bunch of drunkards, if he would just be like, you know what, you guys have got the nuke, bomb the hell out of yourselves, I'm gonna get back in my spaceship and not get killed. Spoiler alert.
The only thing is, I wish there would have been a more, if it would have been set up more of an emphasis on technology, if one of the characters was constantly on his phone doing something, if somebody, if they drove home the technology, because that kind of felt shoehorned in, that the end when it's like, oh, we've, you know, over the last 20 years,
there's some kind of pulse,
and we've been every advance in technology has been because of us, and then the pulse out that knocks everything out. Like, I just feel like that should have been set up a little better. I mean, everybody knows that we all rely on our phones and stuff, and maybe that's me wanting it spelled out a little too much, but I just feel like driving it home a little bit, it just felt like it came out of nowhere.
So, like, if all of their Galaxy 2s all of a sudden did not work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My Note 3 still would.
Sure it would.
I still loved it, though, and that's, it's an alien invasion movie, but not your
robot aliens.
Robot aliens that bleed blue, which that's my favorite running joke through the whole thing. They're the best. Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright are geniuses at having running jokes without overdoing running jokes. And the whole, what do they call them? That was one of my funny, just the whole conversation, and then just throughout, every time they reference them, it's something else. Like, I love that. And
some of the jokes, like the pronoun scene specifically, like, I started thinking, it sounded like a Who's On First skit. It really did with, like, you just used a pronoun is used in place of another word.
Yeah,
yeah, I thought that was really awesome.
And I like the boo-boo scene, the let's boo-boo. Well, what's let's boo-boo mean? Remember when we would leave, there's a bear, so we'd see, go meet by the bear sign. Then it turned into, hey, go meet by Yogi Bear. Then it turned into, oh, go meet by Yogi Bear and boo-boo. Then it just turned into, let's boo-boo. Like, that's a whole thing, and that's such a subtle thing, but I love stuff like that.
And then they called back to it later.
Yeah, let's good. Boo-boo. Like, yeah. So, I mean, I love that, like, because that's the kind of, and it fit Gary King perfectly, because that's a slang term they used 20 years ago
that
in high school.
He's still using.
And yeah. He's still there, and they're not. And how else I want to look at it is, outside of sci-fi, as a story on friendship and, like, dealing with Peter Pan syndrome, I thought it was top. I thought it was great.
That's actually the part that I thought was the best. And I mentioned when you asked me at the top what I thought worked the best about the movie, and I said Nick's character, Gary King being so frozen. That is something that I think, you know, if you come across somebody like that, that, you know, maybe you went to high school with, or you just see the guy that still dresses the same way and still his entire circle is made up of high school people, having progressed past that. Like, I mean, I feel like I know a guy like that, and it made me kind of appreciate maybe a little bit more about why people might do that. Before, it was just like, oh, come on, man, grow up. But it's not really that simple. That was actually, I think, my favorite part of the movie, is right before, you know, he pulls the draft handle to descend and have the mini boss or final boss exposition, when he's really kind of having his come to Jesus moment with his best friend. About, like, things never got better for me. Like, that night was the pinnacle. So he keeps reliving that night, because that's you know, who wouldn't want to relive, you know, the best night or the best time of their life? And, you know, for all of his other friends, you know, they went on to bigger and better things and had much more fulfilling lives. But for Gary, it never did get better. So, yeah, he was a dick the whole movie. But you could kind of see why. I understand why you would want to cling to the music and the fashion from when the last time you were happy was.
And I like that. And the whole reveal with the Band-Aids on the wrist and stuff. Like, I liked all that because it seemed too easy for him to get the five of them together on the surface. But then when you look at it and it's like, if my friend from 20 years shows up, we were great friends for a reason. There's always going to be that seed. So even Nick Frost, which the setup with why they haven't spoken in so long, like,
it took a while to get there, but
even it understands, like, because that seems so easy, like, why he went. And I understand, you know, the second Gary King talks about his mom dying, you know that's a lie.
Right.
But, and you would expect Nick Frost to know why, but I like that it, you can understand it. Like, it seemed easy, but because the friendship was so strong, it makes sense why it was so easy. Because, you know, maybe they did know that he needs this. Like, Nick Frost didn't want to partake in it, but maybe this is what his friend needs. And even though, yeah, he screwed you over years ago and you don't talk anymore, there's still that part of you that you want him to be okay. And if all it is give up one Friday night to go partake in this, then it's worth it, for even though it's been years. But I just really liked it. And just the other four of them, the way they reacted to Gary, I liked a lot, because it was just like, all right, we're in this together. They were essentially the Four Musketeers, because they're dealing with, they don't want to be there.
Their common enemy was Gary.
They don't want to be there with him.
Right.
So, like, they're teaming together, and it's just, like, all kind of like, all right, guys, we can get through this together. And I really like that, because I took a lot from that, and that is, you know, four friends that, I mean, even those four hadn't really grown. They kind of grew apart, too, because it happens. And for them to come together, and those four were getting along great.
And they would, because they were in roughly the same place.
Same scenario. Right. And then Gary, this odd man out, just trying so hard. I thought as a friendship movie, I thought it was fantastic. All right, so we talked sci-fi, talked as a friendship movie. As a Cornetto entry, as an entry into the Cornetto trilogy, you say you do like it more than Hot Fuzz still?
Yeah, I do. I think I like the fact that this was the last one, because for me, yeah, all right, it was a sci-fi movie, whatever. I think the study of friendship over time, like it's a serious art house flick. For Christ's sake, they were aliens that bled toner. But having made these movies for, well, I mean, when did Shaun of the Dead come out? Was that like
2004.
Okay. So, I mean, it was a little bit later than I thought. But, I mean, you're still going on a decade. And if you go back even before that to, like, Spaced, I mean, they've been together doing stuff for a long time. So it does make sense that, you know, if this was going to be, not that they'll never work together again by any means.
Oh, no.
But kind of the final entry in this trilogy, I think it does show, it shows growth from everybody involved as an actor and as writers and as directors, and the characters had a certain amount of growth within them as well. So I like that. I think it was kind of a fitting way to end what has been about a decade of movie making, I guess.
And I mean, I like it because Shaun of the Dead was beautifully shot and directed. Like, I loved Edgar Wright as a director from the second I saw that. But where he is now, four films later and a decade later, he's damn near flawless as a director. Like, every one of his movies to me has been almost perfect. Even though Scott Pilgrim I don't like, because I don't like the source material, that's a perfect movie.
Oh, you said a perfect adaptation.
It's a perfect adaptation of source material I don't like.
Right.
But I mean, where he's come as a director, and then look at Simon Pegg, like, a lot of the stuff he was given after Shaun of the Dead was, hey, remember that guy you played that zombie movie? Do that.
Yeah.
But to look at where he's at now and what he's doing, I mean, just his acting in World's End showed a lot more depth and range than
sure, yeah.
And then Nick Frost, action hero now, the next
not
Tony
being
Jaa.
Just like the fat, yeah, no, not being the fat best friend. Yeah, I think that there was definitely they all branched out, coming from Shaun of the Dead, which yeah, you're coming from something that's really, really awesome. How do you continue to top that? Well, I guess you don't top it. You just do things that are maybe more relevant to you at the time.
And that's what I feel like. I don't think they ever went out to top what they did before. Like, Shaun of the Dead is great. I don't think Hot Fuzz was made to be better than Shaun of the Dead. I don't think World's End was made to be better than either one. And that's why I hate comparing them, but it's so easy to. They just made good stuff that spoke to them at the time. And they said what they wanted to say. And, like, World's End, you look at how many times you're supposed to laugh in World's End compared to Shaun of the Dead. Yeah, they're both comedies, but World's End is not as joke-heavy as Shaun of the Dead. Shaun of the Dead, there's a joke like every 10 seconds.
Yeah.
World's End wasn't intended to be that way. It's not that there were bad jokes, so there's less laughs. There were just less jokes, but they still fit a lot in.
Oh, yeah.
It's still a very funny movie.
Were coming, they were very quick.
Yeah.
You didn't really have time to digest and laugh at the first one before you got hit with three or four more.
But I don't think it was made to be as funny as Shaun of the Dead. I think it was made to just be a completely different movie, which they pulled off.
Yeah, I agree.
And to see Simon Pegg and Nick Frost grow together, like, I've always liked their chemistry on screen, and you can watch them and tell that they're best friends in real life. And Simon Pegg told a story on, I forget what podcast he was on, about...
Was it ours?
No, it wasn't ours.
All
yet.
Right, never mind.
Someday.
Then.
About Nick Frost and why there's so much, like, physical humor between the two of them. Like the like in Shaun of the Dead, where hands of beers, like, they wink back and forth, and it's like... They slept in the same bed together for years. Or not, maybe not years, but Simon Pegg says he was on a rough spot. Nick Frost let him live with them. They used to sleep head to feet and then eventually realized, like, oh, nothing's going to happen. So they just slept in the same bed. So they have that, like, close friend relationship that you can tell. It all carries over when they're on screen together, even when they're at odds, like at the World's End.
Because I'm sure they've been mad at each other before, so you have something real to draw on with that other person, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're going from... It's easier to work off of somebody when you kind of know what's going on inside their head. So I just really liked it, and I realized... And the court... You shouldn't be this excited about seeing a piece of litter just fly up a fence. Like, when the Cornetto wrapper goes up the fence at the end, like, I got excited. It's like, oh, there we go.
Processed food.
It's such a small thing to get excited about, but I loved how subtle it was. And I just, overall, like, I love the movie. It's one of those that I love more as I talk about it. Like, I love it more now than I did the second I was done watching it. I love it more now that we've done this episode than I did before, because to talk about it makes me remember more stuff, and I'm excited to start watching it that second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth time, because everyone, I mean, I still watch Shaun of the Dead. That movie's a decade old. I watch it a dozen times a year, and it still gets better and better because there are still jokes that I somehow missed or have forgotten about or overlooked. So I'm excited to give this. I'm excited to see where I think about this even in 6 years, because I hold Hot Fuzz on a much higher pedestal now than I did when it came out.
Hot Fuzz, I haven't seen it, maybe but twice. This one, obviously, I've just seen it just the one time already. I have seen Shaun of the Dead quite a few times. Shaun of the Dead is one that I feel like I could go back and watch a lot. And maybe I'm just missing the boat with Hot Fuzz and not watching it, rewatching it that much. Because I'm sure there are things that I've missed, and I probably would like it more the second time. I just don't know what a movie has to have for me at this point to want to rewatch. Because I guess I feel like there, and this is definitely different than my viewing habits used to be. I used to be really heavy into rewatching things. I mean, I've seen Ghostbusters about 100 times. But now I kind of look at, well, I could rewatch The World's End, or I could see something I've never seen before in the same two-hour time span. And that's why I really have a problem. If I don't love it the first time, I have a problem going back and watching it again. I'm sure I'll probably get around to maybe watching this, but it's going to have to be years and years from now.
And I hope they all do work together in some capacity. I know Edgar Wright's going to do great things, and Ant-Man's going to put him at a whole new level because he's got this cult following. He's well known, but his movies aren't. He doesn't have that $200 million movie under his belt. He will with Ant-Man, and that'll put him at a whole new level. And I know he's going to keep doing. He does work with Joe Wright. I love the people he gets involved with, like Peter Jackson, Spielberg with Tintin and stuff. So he surrounds himself with great people, and he's only going to do more amazing things. And I really hope, even if they don't do another Cornetto movie or another movie that's intended to be, I hope Simon Pegg's not done as a screenwriter. I really don't. Even if it's a movie he writes with Edgar that he doesn't show up in. Like, I love the way those two write together, that I want to see what they do next.
And maybe it's just because, you know, when they're in the movies that they have written, they kind of write in their own voice, which is always easier to do. But I don't necessarily think that these movies are great because of the acting performances. I don't think they take anything away from them, but it's good screenwriting. That's where it starts. I mean, you could have the greatest actors in the world, but if you have the script for Attack of the Clones, it's not really going to matter. So I agree with you. I would like to see Pegg write some more stuff, because even the things that you can tell are ad-libbed between the two of them are some of my favorite parts of the movies. So just to kind of hear his comedic voice, I would really enjoy.
If you want to look at a career, like a perfect kind of career.
Look at Will Smith.
Simon Pegg has had an awesome career. I mean, just to come out and, to get Spaced made and then turn that into Shaun of the Dead, which turns into like small parts in bigger movies, to Hot Fuzz, to just bigger stuff after that. Like, he's had an awesome career, to Star Trek, to hopefully Star Wars. Like, yes, I want him in Star Trek. And then he still gets to make movies like the one last year, Fantastic Fear of Everything. I just like his career, and I'm excited to see Nick Frost take that. He's got Cuban Fury coming out, where he's the lead with a good cast. So I jumped on Shaun of the Dead early. I saw it in 2004. Like, I bought it the day it came out on DVD. So to follow them all for this time, it's been a joy, and I just want to keep doing it. Like, these are three people that I expect to follow as long as I'm watching movies.
Well, I think you will. I don't think any of them are going away. They are too talented to really go anywhere. And I think you're right with Ant-Man. The character of Ant-Man, I care less about. But when you attach an Edgar Wright to it, I'm really interested. That I could care less about Guardians of the Galaxy, but when you attach Gunn to it, then I'm interested, because I respect what these guys do. And there are a few directors that no matter what they do, I will go see. And Edgar Wright's definitely one of them. I had no interest, really, in Scott Pilgrim. I didn't read the comics. I didn't care. But I like the movies that he makes, so I wanted to go see it. Pegg and Frost, did I think Paul was going to be any good? Nope. Did I go see it? Yep. And it was enjoyable, because I like those guys. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely think they've entered that ever-growing circle of people that I will take a flyer on, even if I don't know anything about the movie, because they've never really, for the most part, never steered me wrong.
And I meant Joe Cornish when I mentioned him working with Joe Wright. Yeah, it just dawned on me. But so that's our World's End episode. That is
the end
of the World's End episode. So, Ryan, before we head out for the day, suggest everybody a movie to watch about an alcoholic.
The first one that comes to mind about an alcoholic is, I don't want to call it one of my favorite movies, because I think that makes things sound really sad, but Nick Cage is kind of a punchline nowadays, and for good reason. But him in Leaving Las Vegas is phenomenal. He's so far gone as an alcoholic, and he befriends the prostitute with a heart of gold, I guess, in Elizabeth Shue. He's great in this movie, and it's very rare that people say that Nick Cage is great in anything except for like spending all of his money. But this movie from 95, I didn't catch it till, gosh, I think I was probably old enough to drink by the time I went back and saw it, but it's phenomenal. It's one of those movies that you really grow to like his character, and you're rooting for him the whole time, and it's heartbreaking, but I think a really awesome movie.
My other one, not so much alcoholism, but addiction in itself, starring another awesome lead from 1998, Michael the Keats Keaton, Clean and Sober. This was along his weird career trajectory where everybody wanted him to be Tom Hanks in the 80s, but he decided to be somebody who's doing a different role every time. And this movie is a perfect example of why he did it, because he could pull it off. And this is a really good performance, a powerful, strong performance from the guy that played Mr. Mom. So really showed some range and a really
Batman.
Yeah, really, really awesome movie about addiction.
So two awesome movies about addiction, starring, well, one guy that doesn't get enough credit for his acting, and yeah, Cage, who gets what he deserves.
That was our World's End episode. Until next time, I am Dave. He is Ryan. We are Movies On Up. You can find me at Dave Bacella on Twitter. At Eric and Dave is my other podcast, Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. That's ericanddave.com, Eric with a K. Find us at Movies On Up, twitter.com/@MoviesOnUp.
Yeah.
MoviesOnUp@gmail.com, facebook.com/MoviesOnUp. Listen to us on Stitcher, on iTunes. Leave reviews wherever you can. Tell a friend. Leave us a nice Facebook page comment like the lovely Ryan Burke did this week. That was a nice little wake up to one day. So
yeah.
Let us know that you're listening. Because
what's up, Ryan Burke? We'll shout you out if you do. That's how few
yeah.
we get.
Or send us free soaps.
Yeah, that was pretty rad, too.
Those are pretty awesome. But until next time, you've been listening to Movies On Up. Until then.
Later on this week.
Vince Vaughn episode.
Yes, Vince Vaughn episode. Career retrospective for Vince Vaughn. I suspect there may be some movies that involve drinking.
Possibly.
Possibly, probably.
Until then.
Keep it up.